Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And we are here kicking off season three with author and consultant, Kath Murdoch. Thank you so much for joining us, Kath. Thank you so much for taking time to come and chat with us today about all things education. How are you doing today?
I am doing really, really well. I am currently on the coast on a beautiful late winter's morning, and there's a plant we have here called wattle, and the wattle is blooming. And so we've got this bright yellow blossom against a beautiful blue sky today. So I feel great.
I bet. What a beautiful picture to wake up to and go and walk the pup around. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, pretty nice. Yeah.
That's awesome. So, Kath, for the people that may not know about you or your work, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit and how you got into education?
Sure. Well, I was a primary school teacher way back when, and spent years as a primary school teacher here in Australia. I was employed by the University of Melbourne in a really interesting and innovative scheme in the 90s called Links to Schools, where they interviewed teachers that were in schools and wanted practicing teachers to come in and work alongside faculty members as part of the teacher education course. So I was lucky enough to get one of those positions and spent some time as a university staff member. I ended up becoming a permanent academic for a little while. So I went from primary school teaching to 10 years in academia and then kind of pretty much in a very organic and unplanned way found myself doing a lot of consulting work. I think as an academic, I loved it and I learned a lot, but I really missed spending a lot of time in schools and I missed being in classrooms. So the way that my consultancy has kind of emerged over the years has meant that I get to do a lot of primary school teaching, which is my first passion and where my passion still is. So I work with schools around the world in the field of inquiry, which is where I have researched and written and taught in that field for decades. So that's me.
That's so exciting. I can imagine that it's quite different, or maybe it's very similar, primary and academia. What was the biggest difference between those two things?
I think I was struck actually by the similarities in many ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, teaching is teaching, right? Mm-hmm. Teaching is about relationships. Mainly the thing that I didn't have as an academic working with, obviously, with, you know, people mainly in their 20s, was I wasn't working with families and parents and so on. But I hear from my academic friends that these days they're dealing a lot more with phone calls from parents, even of their 19 and 20-year-old students. So I think that shows a cultural change. So I guess it was that I loved it. But it was still, you know, it was teaching. I guess I missed the creativity of what I had in a primary school classroom and the pressures on academics to write, research articles in obscure journals that are read by five people. You know, I can do it without that.
No, totally understandable. And going back to the families being involved in collegiate level things, I remember in college one time our dean sending us all an email stating it is against the law for us to talk to your family. Please come and see us if you have a question.
Absolutely. When I think of myself starting at university, you know, back in the 80s, I would have died had my parents had anything to do with it. I was a grown up. It was time. So yeah, things are different. But no, I learned a lot. I learned a lot, and it was a fantastic experience. And I think having an academic grounding and having learned how to be a researcher and to really go deep into things has served me very well as a writer. In particular, so I'm so grateful for that time in the ivory towers of a university.
It's such good to hear, because I know so many people, you know, they get started with education and then they never go to grad school, or they think, well, maybe I could teach at like a community college. And everybody is, a lot of my friends are like, well, I only teach like third grade. How am I supposed to teach 20-year-olds and 21st-year-olds? And I'm like, I bet there's a lot more similarities than we think.
There are. I mean, it's beautiful. You develop fantastic relationships, some of which have continued to this day. I know you've interviewed Tanya Latanzio on your podcast. So she was in my very first year of being a academic lecturer at the university, and she was one of my students. So there you go. And now she's a colleague.
Yeah, what a small world. It's crazy how those 6 degrees of separation just continue and blossom. And it's also really great to see and like uplift other people's work. So it's really cool to have those connections so early in the career. So you all are just going. So Kath, as someone who is very busy, and I can imagine you are very busy working with schools around the world, what are you excited about at the moment?
Oh, to be honest, I am so excited about the fact that in 23 days, not that I'm counting, I get to get on a plane and go overseas again for the first time in 2.5 years.
Wow.
So I have been flying around Australia and working amazing schools around Australia, but I'm excited about getting back into international schools and working with teachers in other places. I've missed it. So
of course
that'd be great. So I'm excited about that, but it's a very personal thing. And I guess I'm excited about the interest in the area that I know we're going to talk about, which is this idea of finding ways to support children to follow and find their passions, their spark, their interests, and schools being places where we can actually do that now in ways that we perhaps, or certainly that I wasn't able to when I first started teaching.
And as well as, you know, being able to, the ability to find those passions, where so much of today's is such a hustle and bustle to get through X, Y, and Z, whether it's the standards, whether it's even the unit of inquiry, whether it's the lines of inquiry. I always wonder how much of it are we really giving back to the students and being like, Johnny, what are you interested in? So it is exciting, because I think because of COVID, we got to see in the lives of their through a screen of what they're really cool. You know, I'll never forget teaching music on a Zoom lesson. And I had a little student, and he was so interested in music, and he always told me he was interested in music. But when his Zoom thing came on, his back wall was completely covered in Legos, and they were pristine. And they weren't just little Legos. These were the big contraptions that he would spend weeks and weeks upon building. And he was only in second grade, and he's now in fifth grade. But I just was like, wow. How are you doing? Like,
yeah.
And so when we finally got to see each other and talk about it, he's like, oh yeah, I do that all the time. And I was like, wow, I had no idea. And it was just really cool to finally get to see into their lives.
Isn't that the best thing? And I think that is one of the great challenges. And as so many schools right now are beginning their school year, it's kind of the first inquiry really that we owe ourselves as educators, is to inquire into these, you know, 25 people that we're going to hang out with for the year. Who are you? And getting them to inquire into each other. You know, we've often done a lot of lame things over the years, like, you know, how many people in your family? Draw your family. And that's okay. But what we tend not to do is say to kids, well, what is it that you want to tell us about who you are? And what is it that you would really like to find out about each other? What do you want to find out about me? So really using that opportunity, here we are all getting together. We're going to spend the year learning and growing together. Let's find out who we are. You know, it seems to me the most obvious thing in the world to begin the year with, but it lays such a critical foundation for quality teaching. You know, that phrase, you know, you can't teach me if you don't know me. Mm-hmm. And so that time to really engage and get to know that child, get to know their family. Back in the day, and I'm sounding like an old lady now, but back in the day when I first started teaching Levi, we did home visit. We would go and meet the family in the children's home over the first few weeks of the year. And it was, you know, that was our Lego wall moment.
Yeah.
Was to go, oh, okay, now I know you a little better. And we do less of that now, but we can still, you know, that first meeting that we have with parents mm-hmm. shouldn't be a meeting where we're telling them about everything we're going to do, but much more a meeting where we're asking them, what is it that, you know, that you can tell me about your child and your family that will help me be able to teach them the best I can?
I know you bring this up, and I immediately think of this tweet that I saw, and maybe it was shared between the both of us, but it was just a Venn diagram, or maybe it was just a circle, and it was just the question, mm-hmm. what do you want to tell me about your child? And it was from the mm-hmm. teacher to the parent, mm-hmm. and I think she had like 30 some odd parents, and it only was very mm-hmm. short, so she's like, I want to make sure everybody gets hurt, is what I think I read. And it was, I can imagine some of those Post-its were pretty amazing, and it probably had nothing yeah. to do with academics. It was probably like,
No. That's my not kid, what it's about.
My kid loves yes. riding bikes. My kid yes. loves playing in the dirt. Yeah. My kid loves yeah. insects. Like, you yeah. know, and it just
and building parent, that mission. As a parent, that's what I wanted teachers to ask me. The teachers that I felt I was so grateful for as a parent were the teachers, and I say this in the introduction in the book, I in fact mention four teachers' names that stand out in my mind because they were teachers that took the time to see who my kids were as people, not just as students, but as people, and that either saw a little spark and then made sure they keep that spark alive, or they would find a way to connect what my kids were learning about with their interests. And it wasn't just my kids. They would do that for all their kids because
yeah.
other parents would say the same thing. So certainly from a parent's perspective, the buy-in that you get as a teacher when you show that parent, I know who your kid is. I know them. I don't know them the way you do, but I've taken the time to know that they love Lego, or that they are an incredible little gymnast, or that bugs are their thing, or whatever mm-hmm. it might be. And that is the work of not just the beginning of the year, the whole year, but everything else can wait mm-hmm. until we really start to feel like I am connecting with each child. I'm finding that spark. And because yeah. that, you'll be able to use that so powerfully as you teach throughout.
Well, like you said earlier, setting up that critical foundation for success. Mm-hmm. And I think relationships mm-hmm. are the beginning of success, mm-hmm. especially when we work with students. And one of my favorite quotes is, it's a person while out of school. And they said, I don't remember the math lesson. I don't remember the science lesson, but I remember how my teacher made me feel.
That's right.
Yeah. And I always think about it. I read that quote on a regular basis because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I know not every child is going to go be Beethoven. Not every child is going to go play with the symphony. But I hope that every child is seen and heard, and that every child thinks that they can enjoy music in some way. And I think that's absolutely. At the end of the day, kind yeah. of more important than being able to read a rhythm or being able to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that you took the time It's the little things, isn't it? It's like, how was the soccer game last night? Or, oh, your sister had a birthday party on the weekend, didn't she? How was it? So it's those things that make such a difference. And we know, you know, we know that as kids, particularly in their teenage years, feeling seen and also having something that you realize that's my thing. That's the thing I'm good at or I'm passionate about. Having that thing can really sustain your engagement with learning and your commitment to being at school. So it's about relationships, but it's also about learning, and it's about the relationship between or the connection between having a passion, having a fire in your belly about something and your general engagement with learning.
How exciting for that. And while we segue into Personal Inquiry, your book, it is your book really did resound in about those relationships built through finding commonalities between personal inquiries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So it, you know, the book Getting Personal with Inquiry Learning, I feel like I described it the other day as inquiry on steroids. You know, when the previous book, The Power of Inquiry, really was an overview. An overview of what we really mean by a strong inquiry-based approach from whole school level right through to everyday classroom level. Probably there was one chapter, I think I even called it Getting Personal, there was one chapter on how to really personalize inquiry. So this book has taken that idea and then, you know, as I say, put it on steroids. It's probably best, although there's a lot of groundwork that I talk about that would be good for someone starting out with inquiry. But I guess in my head, the book was for those teachers that already feel that they bring an inquiry stance to their work, that they're reasonably comfortable with the idea of what say the PYP calls a unit of inquiry, that collective, collaborative, shared inquiry, which I think is really important. I think we need to take kids on collective journeys of inquiry because it's the interaction between them that grows the understanding. However, this is also saying do that, but also let's find some ways for those interests and passions that might not fall in the context of those units of inquiry for children to be able to pursue those more individually. And it fits the strong emphasis we now have on agency, right?
Mm-hmm.
On giving kids a real sense of their agency, their ownership, their management of themselves as a learner. And I found no better way to grow that than when kids get a chance to design their own personal pathway, which may connect with other kids' personal pathways. It's not necessarily 25 people doing 25 different things. It's often, you know, there are kids that are collaborating on something for good reason, but the emphasis is on this is personally meaningful to me, something that I want to understand better or get better at doing. And the added layer to it, of course, is as a result of that investigation, I can use the thing that I'm now better at or understand even more deeply to make a contribution to the community, whether the community is my class, whether it's the school, whether it's perhaps my family, whether it's the wider community, whether it's the world. So it's not a kind of indulgent, you know, I love horses, so I'm just going to do a whole lot of learning about horses and that's it. We try and encourage the children to go, okay, so how might this be of some value or service in some way, this thing that you've got that is your passion, how might you use it? And that, we find, amplifies the engagement and more.
For sure. And again, I find that the moment I ask students, what songs do you want to learn versus just handing them songs, things start falling into place. Like behaviors go away. Kids' engagement increase, laughing is more involved. Like, it's just I truly believe when you involve them into the planning. And now I'm not saying that everything can be planned with students, because
of course not.
There are Exactly. But there are moments, and I truly believe there's a lot more of them than what we try to give ourselves credit for, at least I try, is getting them involved and being like, this is what we're trying to do. How could we do that? What could we bring together to make this grow and make this a more powerful experience for us all? Because whether they learn this song or this song, it doesn't matter to me. They're learning a song. Mm-hmm. So I might as well go with the song that they want.
It's not about the song. It's about the structure of the music behind it. It's about whatever the concept is that you're trying to teach them, right? And Levi, I've seen some beautiful examples of you doing that,
you
shared and that we've had conversations about. And I think it really doesn't take that much, does it, to just say, I'm just going to, why am I making this decision? There's a really interesting phrase that is used in the facilitation community, very simple, that just says nothing about us without us. And there's something really powerful about that. If I'm going to make decisions about the children that I'm working with, how can I involve them in some way in that decision? And at the very least, it's just about being transparent and explaining why we might be doing something the way I've chosen to do it. And then, of course, at the other end of the spectrum is giving them full kind of choice around that. But I think just bearing that release of responsibility in mind the whole time and asking, again, this has become a bit of a cliche, but it's a useful cliche, am I doing for them what they could be doing for themselves?
And
it's just a nice way to keep reminding ourselves, hang on a second, why did I just decide all of that? I think if we don't do that, if we don't, through those micro moments through the day, and it might be where the children are sitting on the carpet, if I micromanage where everybody has to sit, if they don't even get a choice about that, then how are they going to cope if I'm giving them bigger choices about aspects of what they're going to learn? So, trying to share that power and bring that kind of asymmetric relationship, power relationship that we have in classrooms to a more symmetrical, power dynamic, that goes a long way, I think, to then enabling personal inquiry to actually work. It certainly doesn't work if it's the only time you let loose,
Agreed. And that's why I really struggle with the idea of like genius hour, when there's only, when you're saying, okay, so kids can only make decisions for this 1 hour of the whole day.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
it's got to be part of the culture.
Yeah. Exactly. And I do think it is something that, why can't genius hour or exploratory or whatever you want to name it throughout the whole day, and they just weave in and out and they dip and dive and go through it. And it's just, it's just a part of their whole day. And I think,
I think it's a culture. So I think, in the schools I work in, just on a practical level, we have our personal inquiry workshops, and we might have these dedicated times. So it might be once a week, we've got a full workshop dedicated to the pursuit of those passions. However, that is not the only time that the children are going to connect with that. So it might be that that thing that they are working on in that workshop, they are also building a piece of writing in their writing workshop that is related to that. And they might also be building up a particular skill. They might be focusing on an aspect of self-management, which is part of their pitch, that they are kind of building that learning muscle all through the day. So the culture of personalization and the culture of agency is, as you say, is kind of just, that's the way we roll. We have choice, we have voice, we negotiate, we build understanding and learning together. But we might still have these dedicated times. I remember when I was interviewing Sam Sherritt for the book, I interviewed a lot of my colleagues, and he was reminding me that when we do set aside these times and they become part of our routine, we're also making sure that the kids know we value it. Whereas if it's too loose, then it can be easily dispensed with. It's like, oh, we haven't got time for that this week. And so it's absolutely not something that we do you know, last thing on a Friday because we've done all the hard work and now we just get to have a bit of fun and do a personal project. In fact, I think you probably work harder in these workshops than just about anything else.
I agree with that. And it's also when you do it at the end of the Friday or when it's very loosey-goosey, I think it loses a lot of its power and meaning. Because then it's looked at as just, oh, kids are playing or kids are just free choice. And I think I think when our colleagues or our parents or even other students come in and are like, why are they just always playing? And I'm like, well, there's a lot that goes behind what you look at as just playing.
And play is so powerful. Indeed, when in the book, I differentiate between opportunities for what I call personal inquiry, particularly in the early years, where essentially, and I think early years teachers tend to do this better anyway,
already,
but where we design the learning environment, we curate it with materials in response to children's interests. So we're really looking and listening, what's going on? What are they interested in? But we're also curating the environment to spark those interests. And then where we're kind of following their lead. And that's that really responsive planning and curation of the environment in the early years, how we organize for personal investigation or inquiry in the early years. And then I want that playful and aesthetic, you know, as far as materials go, to continue all the way through school. But as the kids get older, we invite them to do a little more. I guess they become more overtly intentional and they pitch their ideas. There's a little more planning and thinking ahead and the projects are often more sustained over often several weeks and more. But play, experimentation, expression with materials, connecting with materials as a way of finding your interest and passion, I think that is critical to this work. And as you say, there's an awful lot more to it than it can appear on the surface.
And it's one of my favorite things I've ever learned was when I worked at an early years, I was the early years music teacher. So I worked with pre-nursery, nursery, K and K. And the amount of learning I did with my colleagues who were fabulous early years educators was learning what you were saying. I'll never forget a wonderful friend of mine who heard her students talk about construction and building. And then the next day she went to like a market or whatever and got hammers and nails and all these different things. And they started building things. And then they started bringing that into math. And then they brought that idea into writing about what did they build. And it was a really powerful thing. I was like, oh, okay. Because I'll be the first one to say, I wasn't very aware of what play-based learning was, but I did know that after that, it was like, there was a lot more to it than just putting blocks out there.
Absolutely. Those teachers were engaged in what Reggio, that whole principle of the pedagogy of listening. So the pedagogy of listening really symbolizing for me that the teacher as inquirer, the teacher listening, the teacher observing, the teacher noticing, and then responding. So it's flipping the idea, isn't it, of, okay, my job as the teacher is to plan it all in advance and set it all up and make them learn these things that are in my head, as opposed to what's in their heads and how might I use that to then respond and place in their path experiences, questions, provocations that will stretch and take that learning further. And that's what they were doing by the sounds of it so expertly. And that to me is about personal meaning. It is about what's personally meaningful to these children in this moment. How might I engage with that and go with the grain of that? You know, you're working with the grain rather than against it when you adopt that stance. I think it's also about, I find I get personally excited and invested in things that I've never even thought about. I had this fantastic conversation with a grade three kids a couple of months ago. And one boy in particular was absolutely obsessed with thunder dragons, as he called them. Long story short, I thought it was another one of those video game conversations that I find really challenging when kids, you know, I have to really work hard at finding, not being too judgy and finding a way to respect their interests, but take it a little further. Anyway, as it turns out, this thunder dragon had this real cultural significance in Bhutan, and we ended up learning together all this stuff about dragons and having this fantastic conversation about real versus fake dragons, and that led him to writing a book about are dragons real? And it was just beautiful, and a conversation and something and a topic, if you like, that I've really never given any thought to until that moment. So personal inquiry becomes personally enriching for me as a teacher. I learn so much from the young people. You've got 25 people or more or less in your class that can teach you about what's in their world and what's in their mind. And then you expand that out to families. I have a school I work with that did the most beautiful thing at the beginning of our school year, which is now, we're two-thirds of the way through. But they, when they had that first interview with parents, they've been engaged with personal inquiry for a few years now. And when they had that first interview with parents, they said to the parents, what's something that you are passionate about or interested in or have expertise in or and would be prepared? If one of our kids contacted you, you'd be prepared to have a conversation with them about that. Didn't have to be their job. It could be anything. It could be cooking. It could be needlework. It could be dragons, anything. And so the parents that were willing to, and most were, shared their passions, and they've now got in this school, in the big grade 5-6 area, they've got a wall where they've borrowed the phrase human library.
I have seen this.
You saw it?
I put it on
Instagram. So there was the human library of the children's passions and interests and skills, which is basically like, hey, if you want to know more about, how to use GarageBand, come and see me because I'm really good at that. So there was that for the kids, and then there was the same for the parents. If you're interested in, there were all sorts of things, a maternal and child health nurse saying, look, I know a lot about babies. I know a lot about, how babies grow and blah, blah, blah. If you're interested, you can talk to me about that. There are all these different things that not only provided another avenue of resourcing for the children, but also sparked ideas, because personal inquiry for some children, they know what thing is that they love and want to investigate or get to do better. Other kids, it's like they haven't connected, that the spark's not there, and it's not until they start to see possibilities, that sounds interesting, I want to find out more about that. So the parents' interests would spark an idea for the children. So I love that. Use your parent-teacher interviews to find out what contribution they might make to your community.
Sure.
If they're willing. And it took a little bit of time. A lot of those parents were new arrivals to Australia, some refugees. It took some time for them to feel that they did have something to offer. And through really beautiful depth questioning by the teachers, they've got this wall of talent, of expertise. Great.
And what an amazing way of creating that culture of learning, that learning doesn't happen within just our four walls.
Yes.
And exactly. It's just that I love that. We do something very similar. We call it like a passion wall or an expert wall for exhibition where kids can contact whoever. And I've always thought, I was like, why are we only doing this for exhibition?
That's right.
I was like, this sounds like, this looks like a really great way. And I like the word, the human library. I think that sounds really.
I did borrow that. So it's a concept. I think in Europe, there's some places in Europe that do it, perhaps elsewhere, where they literally have people in a library that you can borrow to learn hear their story, right? So it's a literal human library. So
what a cool thing.
It's amazing. So it's the same idea, but I just love the concept, and the kids can relate to it. Like, and something that we really notice in our inquiry work, you've probably noticed the same thing, is that oftentimes the very best inquiries that kids engage in are the ones where they've used, where their resources, they haven't Googled the information. They've got the information. It's raw data. They've engaged with real people, real places, real objects, real experiences. So they've got that raw data, which is actually truer research, right? I'm getting it firsthand from this person. And we've often found they're the ones that work better. And definitely that's the case with our personal inquiry. But I just want to loop back to what you said about the exhibition in PYP. For those people that are not in PYP, this is usually year five, where basically that's the closest we get to in the PYP to a personal inquiry. Very much student driven, just beautiful. And I couldn't agree more. I think that if we wait until the end of their time at primary school to say to kids, okay, over to you, now you do it, we're waiting too long. And that we know that we should be giving these sorts of opportunities for kids to exhibit their capacity to inquire, because personal inquiry is not just about learning about something and exhibiting or sharing or contributing that. Personal inquiry is about growing your capacity to learn. So for me, it's that both the what am I learning about whatever I'm learning about, but almost more importantly, what am I getting better at doing and being as a learner? And if we do that more routinely from the get-go, by the time they get to that final exhibition, look out, world. You know, and gone is the stress too of, oh, my God, we've got to get the kids ready for exhibition. They should be ready. That's the whole point of it. It should be. Yep. We're ready to show you we know how to do this now. So starting with versions of that from the get-go, school should be a place that kids come to knowing this is a place where the things that I am interested in actually get heard.
And talked about.
And I don't have to wait until I go home or until the summer break for me to head back into that interest. And obviously it's not all day, every day. I'm not talking about that. But that at least some aspect of their school experience from the moment they walk in honours that personal
identity
that they have. Yes, exactly. It is. Yeah. It's identity. You're quite right.
And I go thinking back about the exhibition, and I went into this workshop with a wonderful, wonderful Ivan member who led this. I think she may have had maybe 10 slides for a 3-day workshop. And the only reason why is because so much of the workshop was us talking, us writing, us collaborating. And I was like, this is something I've got to remember to do. And she said, and I'll never forget this, if we wait until the end of the PYP for them to write a central idea, how do you think it's going to go? And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I was like, we got to shift how we do this exhibition. It's not just a project. Mm-hmm. It's much bigger than that. It's about the growth of skills. It's about the growth of how are they going to learn, because they're moving on. Then a lot of things become a lot more self-management, a lot more self-driven. So we've got to make sure that we're incorporating little bits of that exhibition mindset or phase or idea throughout almost every unit. Like,
absolutely. So couldn't agree more. And in that model of inquiry that I use, the phrase, one of the elements of it is just called going further. And that piece is often the piece that gets missed, which is where we've inquired together for a while, but now under this big idea, so still within that central idea, or if you're not in a PYP setting, it might be your statements of understanding or your essential question, whatever. But where is it in that unit that the children get to say, well, within this context, this is what I am interested in. So that's almost like the first step towards true personal inquiry where we go beyond the shared big idea that we're all looking at. But I couldn't agree more. If they don't even taste that sense of personal investigation within a journey of inquiry that we're all doing together, we're not likely to find it easy to support them in managing something that much where there's a lot more personalization, a lot more choice.
Agreed. 100%. Kath, yeah. Thank you so much for coming today's episode. It's been so much fun to chat with you, like always. Thank you, Kath. People who want to connect with you and learn and see what you are doing around the world, where can people find you?
So on Twitter and Instagram, I'm at KJ Inquiry. And on Facebook, it's just Kath Murdoch Consulting. And I'm on LinkedIn. I think it's just Kath Murdoch. I forget to do LinkedIn, so probably better to do the other ones. I have a website and a newsletter, and the newsletter is one of my favorite things to do, just share.
I do love your newsletter.
Thank you. Thank you. So that's a way. It's not really, it's not about here's what I'm doing. It's about all the resources that are around that I get lucky enough to kind of see and hopefully share with people. So yeah.
A little bit about your newsletter is something I absolutely love. I love that it's like to listen and then you show something to listen to, to read something to read, to watch it's something to watch. I was like, how clever to like reach all types of learners. I was like, that's really cool.
Thank you. Thanks, Levi. Thank you. I'm trying to get another one out there.
Kath, we ask all guests here at the Recess Studio the same question at the end of it to tie us all back into us growing up as students about recess. What do you remember about recess growing up?
When you asked me that, the first thing that comes into my head is from my very early primary schooling days, and it's also showing my age, but in Australia, for when I was at primary school, they delivered fresh milk to every child and in primary school every day. So you would get these little sort of, I think they're little cardboard containers of milk that you got given at recess. But the thing is, you know, for a good part of the year, it's really warm in Australia. And so by the time you got your milk, it was warm. And I swear sometimes it was off. It was disgusting. So I remember the hideous milk that we drank at recess time. That's not a good memory. But, you know, the thing that always just floods my mind when I think about recess as a child, it was all about friendships, wasn't it? It was all about the you know, navigating your way through who was going to play with you. And but the last little memory is, I think it was when I was in prep, which is, I would have been five, is standing on a swing, the kind of swing that you wouldn't be allowed to have anymore, with two of my little friends, and swinging it and singing the Beatles song, She Loves You, Yeah, 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 in time.
Aww. To the
scene, and just singing that. So it must have been a hit at the time, I think. So I just remember the little Beatles moment, even as a five-year-old. I don't know why that's still in my mind, but there you go. It was music then and it still is. I love it.
Music is timeless. That is so true.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kath, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Studio. Be sure
to follow us. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.